live. Welcome everyone to episode 103 of Kowalski Analysis. This is a podcast where we delve deep into the topics that most shy away from. In a world where the surface level often gets the most attention, we're here to explore the depths of what it truly means to navigate life as a single Christian man in today's society. From the complexities of biblical polygyny to the journey of strengthening the masculine spirit, we're here to discuss the unpopular and often overlooked truths that the church might not be talking about. This is a space for open minds and courageous hearts. Whether you're here looking for guidance, understanding, or just curious about the paths less traveled, you're in the right place. Our conversations aim to challenge, inspire, and empower you to live a life of purpose and faithfulness. Ladies, we're glad you're tuning in too. Your perspectives and insights are invaluable as we journey together through these discussions. So to all our listeners, let's dive into the depths, confront the hard questions, and discover the unspoken truths together. Welcome to Kowalski Analysis, and welcome our special guest, Casey Jones. How are you, Casey?
Yeah, I'm good, Rob. Yourself? It's good to be here.
It's great to have you. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I just learned about you through Rich Cooper. He was my last guest, and somebody told me, they're like, yeah, Rich, because I've been talking a lot about polygyny. I'm a believer, a Christian. I've only discovered the truth of biblical polygyny just right around a year ago, and I've been talking a lot about it, and somebody said, yeah, Rich just had on somebody that had six wives, and I asked Rich about it, and he told me about you, so pretty excited to talk to you.
No, I'm glad to be here. It's been a wild, rollicking and unexpected journey to the point where you wake up one day and you realize that through some sheer, a hilarious coincidence of accidents, you've ended up with six wives. There's a whole bunch of lessons that I learned along the way. There's things I'd do better if I had a chance to do it again. There's things I look back on and I realize I got right. And in that regard, it's one of those things I feel reasonably passionate about. I'm not a polygynous evangelical in that I think that everyone should live this life. I do at least advocate that it should be considered a viable, legal, lawful, ethical, and spiritual, legitimate way of living.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at. I don't think I'm not saying that everybody should do it or it's right for everybody. I think the majority of people wouldn't do it, but what you get with prescriptive monogamy is a bunch of extra shit that comes with it. That's why it's not, the Bible never prescribed lifelong monogamy anywhere. The church has told us that it did, but there's no support for it biblically. And what happens is it causes men to be afraid of marriage, and then we just fornicate. Yes. We just go out and have a lot of sex in our 20s, and we break girls' hearts, and then they have problems pair bonding later. We make babies outside of wedlock. There's an imbalance of women to men that want, women that want to be married, and there just aren't enough men willing to marry them. It's a real problem. But so I'm really excited to talk to you to learn some of the practical advice, things you've figured out over the years of having six wives legally, personally. So, but before we do that, I want to give you a proper introduction. But what I'd like everyone to do, that's, we've got some people watching now, is everybody do me a favor, hit the thumbs up button or the heart button, depending on where you're watching, drop a couple likes and drop a comment. Let me know that you can see and hear us. Okay. I'm in Costa Rica. He's in Australia. We're on a completely opposite ends of the world. So let us know that you can see us and hear us. Okay. This will also help more people see this podcast and hopefully listen to the content. But let me tell everybody who you are, Casey. So Casey Jones is an Australian veteran and a farmer. He's been living openly as a secular polygamist for 14 years. He writes and posts on a variety of subjects, but his favorite is teaching other men tactics and strategies to enable peaceful, functional, loving, long-term polygyny, cohabitating with multiple wives, of which he has six. He's also, and this wasn't part of my intro, but I saw that you're you're a homesteader, and you're also an ex-adult film star. Am I right in that?
Yeah, I've had a few. There's a few interesting bio lines in my CV that I've collected over the years. But that's probably one of the ones that gets a little bit more attention than the others.
So let's just start off with your origin story, because I think that's the thing that most people, including myself, want to know about. Like, so you, how do you go from, you know, being a veteran, because you were probably, well, maybe you weren't, like, well, I just assumed you were single when you were in the military, because you're going through boot camp, you're not having any sex, and now all of a sudden you got six wives. So what was that journey like? How did that happen?
To be very clear, during Australian boot camp, I got charged with fraternization and did 10 days in what I suppose you might call the brig, as punishment for that. So I was actually having sex through boot camp. How did I go from one to the other? I was always drawn from some of my earliest memories to the concept of polygyny. I didn't know what to call it then, but if we go right back to early childhood stuff, when you're just little kids and you're just in the playground and you have little silly schoolyard boyfriends and girlfriends in what we call primary school, you'd call early grade school. And I didn't understand, I'm like, oh, Jill's my girlfriend. And then I'd be like, oh, like Julie. Julie could be my girlfriend too. And people going, you can't have Jill and Julie as your girlfriends. You have to choose one. I'd be like, but why? Why do I have to only choose one? I don't want to just choose one. And that kind of followed me through life. I entered into an experienced monogamous marriage when I was younger. For me, it was a terrible, terrible, terrible disaster. I don't think she was a bad woman, but I don't think I was a bad husband. I just think I didn't know what I know now about female psychology, and I was following the societal narrative, and therefore doing everything wrong, and doing everything I could possibly do to actually kill off our sex life, because I didn't understand the psychological drivers of female libido. So it became a sexless marriage. I was unfaithful several times throughout. She'd inevitably find out about my infidelity. I'd go, oh, well, that's it. I suppose it's time for us to break up now. And she would go, no, we're not breaking up. And she'd fuck the shit out of me for about 3 weeks, which really confused me at the time. And then once she felt that she'd resecured her resource, sex never get turned off again. And that this continued for several years before it eventually had to come to its inevitable end. At the conclusion of that marriage, I decided that I wasn't going to do that again. Not that I wasn't going to have sex with multiple women again. What I was going wasn't going to do. I wasn't going to lie. And I refused to endure the stress of affairs. So after that marriage, I didn't think I was going to probably end up settling down again. And instead, what I did was I never wanted to hand one woman the keys to controlling 100% of my access to sex ever again. Mm-hmm. Because I had come to the conclusion that was not a winning strategy for power dynamics in a relationship, and if I handed that power to a woman, she would inevitably use it. So by this point, I've heavily switched from PUA culture to MGTOW culture, reading up all their evolutionary psychology studies and all the data that they were presenting. I was like, well, that's definitely the strategy. I'm not going to hand a woman all that power again.
So let me just tell everybody, he said PUA is pickup artists and MGTOW is men going their own way. Now, just to clarify something for myself, do men go, MGTOW guys still sleep with girls?
Depends what level of MGTOW you consider yourself. There's levels of MGTOW, but yes, many MGTOW do. One of my best friends has been MGTOW for 15, 16 years now. And he just has a policy of, a woman's only allowed to be in his house for one night at a time. Never subsequent nights. If she leaves any here, he throws it straight in the bin. He doesn't allow any nesting. He's very, very stringent and strict. But I definitely liked the cut of their jib, and they were explaining all the things that I had done wrong throughout the course of my marriage. So either way, I decided to start telling women that I wasn't going to be monogamous anymore. So every woman that would come into my life, I would say immediately, by the way, I'm not going to be monogamous to you. I'm going to sleep with other women. And that's just the way it's going to be. If you can like it or leave it. And some women left it. But I was surprised. I was amazed at the number of women who just replied with, oh, thanks for being honest with me. That's okay. I just hate being lied to. And that just took me by surprise, because I anticipated this style of life would lead to an ongoing, just a never-ending bachelor lifestyle. But it didn't. It actually led to me falling into some form of default polygyny, where people would become regular fixtures in my life, and they knew that there were other regular fixtures in my life, and they just were consenting to that and they were okay with that. And as a result, I found myself falling into polygyny of sorts. And I found it incredibly gratifying and satisfying, I'd had a few other influences that really kind of stood out to me and made me want to pursue it further. I remember the first time I saw the show Big Love, the HBO show on Mormon polygamy. And that had a huge impact on me. I remember watching it when I was still married and thinking, oh man, this guy's got it made. This is living the dream. And then I remember watching it again when in my first polygamous relationship, and wondering about how well and how he managed to keep such a peaceful, functional home. And then after the conclusion of that relationship, I restructured the way I did things and had my subsequent polygamous relationship, which I built from the ground up, which is the one the world can see now. And I watched it again and marveled about just what a terrible, terrible job the protagonist Bill was doing at running a polygynous home and all the mistakes he was making, and just how full of discontent the home was compared to the one I was living in. And I think it was a nice a benchmark to measure myself against as my own progression went through. As far as the adult film star stuff, that was something I did for a few years after the army. I discovered that being an infantry qualifies you to shoot people and dig holes, which aren't too great skill sets in the free market. But what I could do well is I was very conversant with women, and I was a well-known ladies man / man whore by that point, and there were a number of young amateur and semi-professional and professional young adult starlets who wanted to create videos and content, and they would ask me if I'd be willing to do that with them, and they would pay me money for it. And it's like, you want to come over and give me a blowjob and you give me money as well? Okay. That doesn't sound like the worst deal in the world. And it kind of progressed from there into full-fledged film. and it wasn't something I intended to do for a long time. I did it for a short time to get where I wanted to go in the next evolution of my life. And once I achieved that evolution, it was something I left behind me.
Gotcha. So there's a lot of questions I got. So you're married to six women. Would you say you fell in love with each of them?
Definitely.
Okay.
Without full, complete, utterly head over the heels in love.
Okay. So was there any convincing that had to go on in order to get into this? Like, so you were already in a polygynous relationship, so you had two or three of them, I'm assuming. Here's what I was going with it. I have a coaching program. By the way, guys, if any of you out there that believe in polygyny and you are having a hard time finding a woman that is down with this, drop me a private message. I'd love to talk to you. Now my platform before I discovered this truth was waiting to have sex until marriage. I wrote a book about it. That used to be a big man whore kind of.
I saw that in your backstory. It's there are certain similarities.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying this video, don't forget to hit the thumbs up button, leave a comment below, and subscribe to my channel. Feel free to share it also with a friend. I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks.
So I still believe in waiting, but I also now believe in, you know, waiting until marriage to have sex, but you can marry as many women as you can provide for. So, but it's a harder road, I think, because here, when you screw a girl, she gets attached to you. I used to, when I was a man whore, I would have a roster of, you know, five or six girls maybe that I was sleeping with at any given time. And they would just put up with some really bad behavior on my part because I wasn't committed to them. Some of them knew that, you know, about the other girls, and they just were like hoping that I was going to commit to them. Now, had I known about polygyny, maybe I would have married a few of them, but I did not know about this, so I didn't. But I felt like that's an easier path to get into, you know, where you were already having sex with these girls, and then you say, hey, by the way, you know, you can get married to me if you like. I already got a couple wives, but that seems like a better, like an easier, not better.
Far easier. I, over the years of trying to figure this part out, there's not really an instruction manual on being a polygynous. And so I studied as best I could from other examples available to me. The two main examples being Islamic polygyny and Mormon polygyny. And there was much to learn from both of them, but there is a lot of difficulties involved in religious polygyny that didn't exist for me. And there was a lot of problems they were facing that I could just very easily circumnavigate. So how did I find myself into the most current relationship that is the one I'm very happy to share with the world? I was known previous to this relationship for being polygamous. And when that, I was in a, what we might call a poly triad. So it's myself and two girls. I'd previously been in a poly quad, which is myself and four girls. One of them came in and left on good terms. But when that relationship came to its inevitable end, as it had to do, I was already well established and known for this lifestyle through certain social media vectors. And another woman actually sought me out. She had previously touched base with me in a friendly manner, and when I became single, she made her interests more known, that she specifically had started following me because of this lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that she had actively wanted. It's a relationship in her family structure that she had actively wanted, and she wasn't sure if it was actually real or not. It was just something that existed in fiction and entertainment. And when she found my profile, she'd been very relieved, and she entered my life as a partner around the same time I'd previously been dating another woman, young woman. And she, it was a casual thing, and we'd tried things out, and it was really nice, but I'd step back from that relationship. So when number one came into my life, it came up in conversation that this other woman existed, and she said, I'd like to go meet her. And well, that's up to you. So she reached out and contacted this girl, and they went out for coffee, and she came back after having coffee and said, I get it. I get why you're so smitten with her. I get why you think she's amazing, because she's incredible, and you'd be an idiot if you didn't date her. So number two came into my life, and we had a very happy, successful, cohesive little poly triad for a couple of years.
I don't know if you have more to this story, but and I think I know the answer, but I want to hear your answer is, why would a woman want seek this out? What would be the benefit for them to be in a relationship like this?
Oh my God, there's just so many. I feel so sorry for monogamous wives. They've got it so hard. They've got it so hard. They don't know how hard they're doing it. It's marriage and life is a team effort. And Christ, women out there are just, especially modern Western women, they just have it really, really, really difficult. I cannot express just how hard they have it. And the way modern Western society is structured to demand more of women than I think has ever been demanded of women before in history. Women previously weren't required to go into the workforce. Ever since, you know, second wave feminism kind of screwed the labor market for everyone, now a dual income is a necessity for most families. It's not, you know, just waiting to marry a millionaire isn't a viable strategy for most women, so they can be a stay-at-home mum. You need two incomes. And that is really freaking difficult. And if you want to be an involved mother, and if you want to spend plenty of time with your children, or if you want to do things like homesteading, or if you want to do things like homeschooling, it becomes an impossibility. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're in polygyny, there is, you know, immediately we had a three income household. After 2 years, when number three came along and number four came along, we now became a five income household. A couple of years later, when number five and six came along, we became a seven income household. And suddenly things get really, really, really easy.
Right.
I know and have met other homesteading families and farm wives, and I've never seen harder working women in my life than not only a monogamous wife who has to mother and be a wife and be a loving wife with energy to give to her husband, relationship, and sexual energy left at the end of the day, but also farming is just such an incredibly time, labor, energy intensive pursuit. These women, I've never seen harder working women in their life, and they live in such a state of constant exhaustion, and it ages them so quickly. I feel a lot of compassion for them. Whereas in a polygynous situation, it is, you know, the division of labor. Things become really simple. Things become easy. Things get divided. And just for a very, very, very basic example, and by the way, I do not advise anyone who wishes to be a polygynist to get six wives. That's stupid and it's extreme. And don't do what I did. That's way too much. I'll go into why later if we get the opportunity. But in the situation of having six wives, now we, in my home, I decided many years ago that parts of our routine as a family that are sacred and can't be messed with. And one of those is dinner. We all sit down around a very large dining table every night and have dinner as a family around the dining table. That happens at 6 in winter and 6:30 in summer months, every single night. And we sit down, hold hands, we say grace, and we eat as a family together.
You're a believer?
No, I'm an atheist.
Okay, well, you said say grace. I
may be an atheist, but not all of my wives are. And okay, regardless of that, I believe that these things exist cross-culturally and cross-religious ideologies across the millennia for a reason. And if you go to hunter-gatherer tribes, we see them sit around, there's two things. They eat together, and before they eat together, they express gratitude for the food that they get to eat. Mm-hmm. And I think those two things are an incredibly important bonding mechanism for a familial unit.
That's so good, yeah. It really is. I mean, when me and my girl started praying together, it was a very intimate experience, and it really brought us closer. But hey, real before you continue this story, I just want everybody to pray for Casey's salvation. The same way we prayed for Rich Cooper, let's pray that Jesus reveals himself to Casey. Go ahead, Casey. Keep going.
I appreciate that. Yeah, so we say grace as a family. It's a non-denominal grace that we say every night. And it's the same prayer that we say every night. And we hold hands for that. And sometimes we might recite it together. Sometimes one person might be asked to recite the prayer, and then we eat together. Now, that's a large, very nutritious, delicious home-cooked meal, and a good few hours of love and effort's been put into that. But the great thing is that if you have six wives, that's once a week. We obviously Saturday, we don't do that. Saturday's more of a kind of a social thing, or it'll be barbecues, or we'll have a smoker or the spit or the grill, or we'll go out to dinner. We might all go to a restaurant or to a pub. So that's a separate day. But for the six other days, there's a home cooked meal every single night of the week. And that means for that to be sustainable, a wife in a six wife polygynous home only needs to cook once a week. That's a sustainable thing. She's not cooking every single day for her family. She cooks once a week. That's it. She cooks one meal a week. And when she only has to cook one meal a week, it's a cracker. It's a good meal. She puts all her energy and her thought and her time into planning. Next Tuesday, I'm going to get home from work. This time, I'm going to go past the shopping center. I'm going to get this and this and this. And she's planning it the day before. She might get things marinating the day before. She's setting it all up. And I tell you, the meals that you have when a woman has one meal a week to cook, and that's right, her one meal that she pours all her love into, and she gets to demonstrate all her wifely amazingness into one meal. Oh, it's a good meal. That's every night. That is every single night. But
I like it.
But the workload on an individual woman is low. It's a low workload. The housework is a low workload. She's not trying to do every single chore because the chores are divided up. I don't divide the chores up. They do their weekly wives meeting. There's a division of labor, and they have more free time. They have more free time to pursue some form of employment, normally in a part-time capacity or a reduced hours full-time capacity. They have time to continue to advance their academic studies and career. They have time to pursue advancement in other hobbies and pastimes, whether that be horse riding, whether that be some other hobby they might take up. Two of my wives enrolled in a seamstress course, and they get their sewing machines and overlockers, and they pack them into the Land Cruiser, and they drive off to this seamstress's house who's retiring after 50 years and has been running this course over a year period to teach other women who want to learn how to do all these dyeing skills, like making dresses from patterns, making shirts and pants and things and trousers from patterns, and doing everything from scratch, and how to do that. So that's a course they enrolled, and they've got the time in their evenings to do that. They've got the time in the days to pursue those things. People can take on projects, they can take on hobbies, they can take on other interests and other pursuits that can enrich their life and by virtue enrich our lives. One of my wives decided to pursue her pilot's license and learn how to fly a plane. All these things become possible. They become possible because time exists, and they also become possible because money exists. The financial strain is just rapidly reduced. The cost and expense of running a household is drastically reduced when split seven ways. If someone wants to take a year off to have a child what, 2 years off to have a child, it doesn't have a significant impact on the family or the household as a whole. The reasons why a woman would want to be polygynous are infinite. And I would say that the amount of women who have said, I'd never, ever, ever want to be, you know, one of a harem, or, you know, I have to be this man's everything, and everything has to be revolved around me. And then they see how good life can be for a polygynous wife, and they're like, oh, actually, I'm coming around to that. Maybe if one or two sister wives might really help, and you really can bring me around to that, especially in the for homesteaders or farming wives. But furthermore than that, I would say that there is one of the things that really surprised me is there is an oversupply of women who are actively desirous of a polygynous marriage, and an undersupply of men competent and capable of supplying that that demand.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Kowalski Analysis. Thank you so much for spending your time with me. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you'd be so kind, wherever you're watching or listening to this podcast, leave a review. It helps more people find it, and I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks in advance, and have a blessed day.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I heard people say, basically, if you enter into a polygynous marriage, it's like you already know that the guy's a good husband. You can see he's already got experience. You can see how well he treats the first wife and everything. Like when a woman marries a man for the first time, it's like hiring somebody that's never had a job before. You really don't know what kind of employee you got on your hands. So there's some safety in that. It's like a pragmatic decision. But that is the big rumor is oh my God, you better make a lot of money if you're going to have that. And everybody I've talked to that is a polygynist says the exact same thing. It's like your expenses go so far down because you have multiple incomes and under the same amount of fixed expenses on your mortgage, your gas, electric, all the same, all that's the same. You don't have to pay a babysitter. You can homeschool
I think one of the great, there is a lot of advantages. I know, like, for example, I just spoke about, things that are financial in nature and maybe things that might seem like selfish motivations for a woman, to want polygyny. I'd say there's a lot of other motivations which are far more noble and moral in their nature. I think our school system across the West is, I think we can all agree, pretty broken. And I personally believe even just the concept of daycare is for young infants is borderline evil in its abdication of responsibility of mothering a newborn or young infant child in its most vulnerable years, where it's bonding most and needs that love. And I've read all the studies about the cortisol levels in children, in small children who are sent to daycare. That doesn't become a problem in polygyny. There is no such thing as daycare. You don't do that. It is always the child is always with a parent, or child is always loved and cared for in the home. It's not one of 30 other screaming children of the exact same age vying for the attention of one underpaid worker.
Makes sense.
And homeschooling becomes a very real and very easily achievable thing to introduce without impacting the finances of the home, mm-hmm. and the income that to provide those children with the best life possible. There's a huge amount of more noble things. I would also say that a polygynous home is a very, very loving home. It's not cold. It's not. Outsiders tend to want to make it about sex, and it's not. Sex is a very important and vital part of any healthy, loving relationship, but it's not about sex. You don't have more or terribly less sex than you might otherwise have. But there's a lot more love. The amount of love and affection that exists in the home that we built is just beyond comprehension. The support mechanisms that exist is huge. One of the things I've heard so many times from monogamous wives is how lonely they feel. It's one of the most common reports that I hear from monogamous wives. And over the years, I've done so many polls on this stuff, and I've put out so much nets to try and gain information from all my various female followers on various platforms, and filtered by relationship. And one of the most common things from monogamous women is loneliness. Especially if they become a stay-at-home mum, especially then, because what happens by default is the husband's work hours go right up to compensate for the sole him being the sole provider, and she sees him less and less and less. And in a polygynous home, the woman is never really alone. She always has another partner right there, another wife right there, and they bond and they love each other and they care for each other, and they share affection and they share support, and they can do things together. If I'm not there, that they're not alone. And the other big thing as well is I, as a husband, get to spend more time at home. And this is something I write about lots, and I've posted about lots on X, is why I'm really against one of the things that a lot of the trad cons keep pushing is that the man should be the sole provider and the woman should stay at home and raise the children. And what that ends up doing is that she's doing 100% of the actual interactions with the children, and he is out there being a wage slave and interacting with his children in a really minimalistic way just due to time constraints. And when the tradcon marriage dissolves, she immediately gets default full custody because she's the she can prove to the court that she was the one providing all the actual nurturing care to the child. Whereas I can spend as much time at home as I want. That I'm a big believer in about sharing that financial load for the family. And people if done right through polygyny, people can work essentially, part-time hours or reduced full-time hours, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. And I can spend just as much time at home as any of my wives would. I get to spend more time as a result in the home. I get to spend more time as a result with the women I love. I get to spend more time as a result being an active house husband, around the house, around the homestead, and with wives and with children.
I love it. I mean, let's everyone remember that the divorce rate under monogamy only is 56%, and 85% of the time the women file for divorce. Everybody pretends like monogamy is so great; it's killing it. This is the best. I'm like, it's a shit show out there. The marriage rates are the lowest they've ever been. The divorce rate's sky high. Everybody's fornicating, like it's a disaster. So please, take a look around. But when you said there's a lot of love in a polygynous home, and my thought was, is like, well, no shit, because you can't pour from an empty cup, right? Like, have you ever been depressed? It's impossible to all you think about is yourself when you're depressed, because you're just like, you're on survival mode. Like, but when you're in a polygynous marriage, I'd imagine, because your cup's overflowing, you got some money, you're pouring from a full cup, so you can be kind and loving, and you got time to invest. It's not like you're just stressed out, time to make the donuts, getting up early, running to the office to drop the kids off at daycare. Of course, there's not going to be a lot of love in that home because everybody's just trying to survive. So yes. I can totally see how that's the case. Yeah. What's the biggest challenge to it all? Because I got to imagine there's some big challenges.
The biggest challenge external to the home is societal acceptance and judgment. The biggest internal challenge done right It's reasonably smooth and challengeless. Done wrong, I can imagine it being a nightmare. I've done it wrong previously, and it was a nightmare. Not being a strong enough leader, not having enough structure, makes things really bad. You need a lot of structure in your home. You need a lot of rules in your home that people follow. You need stringent rules of how the whole household functions. You have to have stringent rules regarding personal conduct to one another, and that needs to be enforced. And you need to, as the husband and leader of the home, enforce those rules, enforce that discipline. It takes a lot of individual discipline on the part of the individual, and you need to, when you're selecting a partner, make sure that you're selecting on the correct criteria, not just about how hot you think this chick is, what qualities they have, what personality traits they have. And I'd say one of the most important quality traits outside, amongst submissiveness, a desire for obedience, a desire for the lifestyle, but they have to be able to emotionally self-regulate. That's incredibly important. They have to demonstrate a high level of emotional and mental stoicism, because it's a lifestyle that's different. It draws a lot of criticism. You will draw hatred from the world. You will draw hatred from other men. You will draw hatred from other women. You are upsetting the apple cart. You need to be able to endure that. You need to not turn on each other. So there's two main challenges in that. The first one is as the husband, setting up a home with a lot of structure in it, with a lot of rules that are written in stone and must be followed. And if they can't be followed, be willing to, and someone becomes a problem in the home, eject the person who is the problem.
So your rules are actually written out, they're documented?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's no, that way there's no misinterpretation. There's no, he said, she said, there's no, oh, but I thought you meant, there's none of that. We have rules for conduct and rules for behavior and rules for conflict resolution when it arises, of how to do things and how to do things in a good way, in a loving way, in a kind way, in a way that assumes the best of other people, not the worst of other people.
Well, let me ask you this. Well, do you share those rules with people? Do you coach people or no?
I don't coach anyone.
No. Somebody actually posted a comment about coaching. I'll share this here. It says, Casey Jones, I'll invest $5,000 a month for 30 minutes. 30 minutes a month of life coaching. I'm 35. I have 4 fiancés, gave an engagement ring, but I don't have the coordination to move them in. I can start coaching ASAP. Hey, just drop Casey a message on X. You can find him at Casey Jones. Was it 2383? What is it?
I don't even know my own handle. What is it? Let's see it here.
I think it's in the show description.
Yeah, it's Casey Jones, 26383.
Okay. Drop him a private message. I want to know if you'll share the rules with me, number one, because I want to run an orderly house if I do this.
Yeah.
And my first question. The second question is wife spankings. Are you a proponent or no?
No, I'm not. I have a very, 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 very extremely hard and stringent rule against any form of physical contact, impact upon another, any initiation of force or violence upon another, as any method of behavior modification. I'm all for wife spanking in the bedroom for other purposes. I am 100% against anything like that as a method of behavior modification. Okay. I've written on this topic ad nauseum. I've done videos on this topic. There are numerous methods available. All of them that I use are peaceful methods. The most common method of behavior modification is sitting down and having a conversation. That at the end of the day, if you are not if you're not your wife's, for want of a better term, center of her world, if she isn't looking to you for approval and validation, then it's probably not going to work, because the biggest tool that you have is to sit down and say, hey, honey, this behavior here and what you did here and what you said there is really unacceptable. And quite frankly, I'm really disappointed in seeing that from you, because you're better than that. I know you're better than that. And we need to fix this. So let's just assume that there's some other reason for why this occurred, because it's out of character for you. And if you'd like to share those reasons with me, so maybe I can understand what's going on in your life and maybe we can address those things. But we also need to address what you did and how you fix that. And 99 times out of 100, that'll fix the problem. And if that can't fix the problem, then you probably picked the wrong person to be with. In the one out of the 100 times where that doesn't fix it, the method of behavior modification that I advocate for is simply taking something away which is yours to take away. So as of I did a video on this on X maybe about 2 weeks ago, actually about 10 minutes. And I encourage anyone who wants to watch this, called How to Punish Your Wife. And I say the best way to understand how to implement behavior modification as women is to watch what women do to try and modify male behavior in relationships, because women project and they're telling you their secrets when they do. And the number one thing that all women do is they do a silent treatment. They withdraw attention and they withdraw affection and they ignore you. And that's because, not because that has an effect on men. Men love the silent treatment. I went out and stayed out drinking too late, and my punishment is that you be quiet and leave me alone. I should do it more often. This is fantastic. They do it because that would work on them, because women require constant attention and validation and interaction. And if you withdraw that, you go, I'm just not talking to you today. That behavior was that unacceptable. And I honestly don't see you being contrite for it. I don't see you being willing to change. And until that changes, I'm just not going to engage with you.
And the time out.
And women do not cope with being ignored very well. One of my partners, we were dating at the time, and she didn't have a license. I said, you need to go get your license. And you need to go get your learner certificate. And she kept procrastinating. We weren't cohabitating yet. And I turned around and said, that's it. I've asked you enough times. You have dismissed. You obviously are not taking me seriously. You're dismissing me. Until you have your learner certificate, you're not to come over to my home. I'm not speaking to you. I'm not taking any phone calls from you. I'm not replying to any text messages from you. I'm not engaging with you at all until you've done that thing. And she immediately, within 4 days, she was banging on my door, holding up her learner certificate. And it normally takes weeks and weeks and weeks. She phoned around every single roads and traffic authority in Sydney and caught a train and a bus and this and that, and read her little manual and went there and did it and got it and came back. 4 days of no attentions. And it's peaceful. I'm not doing anything too. A lot of women will come into your comment section and go, that's abuse. You can't do that. That's going to cause trauma, because that's how much they don't want you to take away attention. But I'm not doing anything too. I'm taking something away. And more importantly, I'm taking something away that is mine to take away. I'm not taking away their car keys. My time is mine. My attention is mine. My energy is mine. No one's entitled to it. I choose who I invest it into. And if you're not behaving in a way worthy of that investment, then I'll just remove that until you do behave in a way worthy of that investment. I'm not doing something to. I'm taking something away, and I'm taking something away that is mine to take away. No, I'll go one step further and say the next thing that women do to try and modify male behavior and punish men is they withdraw sex. Now, you and I both know that women like sex just as much, if not more, than men. But they like power more. So they'll happily deny themselves sex in order to gain power in a relationship. And two people can play that game. We'll happily turn around and say, look, honey, your behavior today was unacceptable. And look, I appreciate that lovely lingerie you're wearing for our night together, but I'm just not in the mood to have sex with you after the way you behaved. And she can play her silly games and she can try and seduce me and she can grind up against me. And I'll be like, look, I've said what I said and you're obviously not respecting my boundaries. And, you know, you're not entitled, as we're often told as men, we're not entitled to sex in a relationship. Just because you're married to someone doesn't mean you're entitled to it. No, we'll just withdraw that. And she can stomp her little feet and storm off back to her room and slam the door. That's perfectly fine. She can dig her hole a little bit deeper. It'll just last a little bit longer until she comes back contrite and saying, you're right, I'm sorry, I'll fix it. And we go, oh, thank you. You're suddenly very sexy again now. I didn't do something to. I took something away, and I took something away that's mine to take away. My sexual time, my sexual energy is mine. I don't need to give it to someone. I was entitled to it. And it's a very hard one for them to turn around and claim is some form of abuse. Should they ever storm off and permanently in this end up, you know, before a court? My husband abused me. He didn't have sex with me 2 days in a row.
Let me ask you this. What is the situation like? You mentioned, not to come over your house. I thought I heard that your wives have six different bedrooms.
Obviously, in that particular story, as I pointed out, we weren't cohabitating yet. We're dating.
Okay.
The method of polygyny that I advocate for is cohabitating polygyny. Now, there are different ways of doing polygyny when it comes to habitation. The fundamentalist Mormon model tends to be close but still separate in that wives will have their own houses, or if they do have one large house, they'll have separate wings of the house that the wives tend to isolate themselves into more, and they come together for a lot of family activities and family time, but there's a lot more separation. Then you have Islamic polygyny where it's 100% separated. And a polygynous man might have wives in different suburbs, if not different towns or cities. That for me is a non-starter, because it really puts a huge strain on all involved. It puts a huge strain on the husband, on the man, in trying to juggle and separate himself between these different commitments. And it puts a significant strain on the individual families that have to live essentially autonomous without the husband and father a large percentage of the time. If it's a two-wife situation, then at least 50% of the time they're without. If it's a four-wife situation, then it's 75% of the time they're without. And for me, this was a non-starter. I came to this conclusion very early on in my exploration into non-monogamy. I first delved into the non-monogamous community through the polyamorous community to try and learn more from them and how they went about dealing with non-monogamy and handling multiple relationships. And I learned a lot of good things from the polyamorous community. And I think there's a lot to learn there. There's a lot of contemporaneous, solid data coming out of it. But there's two, the most common non-monogamous situation is breakup is a one man and two women. That's the most common dynamic that exists, one man and two women. And there's two different ways of doing this, two main different ways of doing this, called the poly V or the triad. A poly V is when the man has to separate him, is separate himself between these two relationships. The two relationships exist as separate individual entities.
Gotcha.
And he spends half his nights and time with partner A and half his night and time with partner B. And there's parties and events, and it's a very, everyone kind of knows each other within the polyamorous community. So he'll take this partner to this event, and he'll take this partner to this event, and he'll go out to this place with this one, he'll go to this place to that one. And he's kind of running back and forth, stretching himself between them. And then there's what you have, then you have the poly triad, in which he's with two women, and these women may or may not be. It's one relationship. They may or may not have some kind of romantic involvement between the two girls, but that's not the important of the point. The part is that they exist as one relationship. They spend time together, they go out to dates together, they do all things together. And in this situation, the man is not stretched, and the women are only seeing him half the time. They see him 100% of the time. Yes, they're not the only one with him during that time, but they get 100% of the time that he has available to give. Mm. And that immediately seemed to be the more functional and less stressful of the two scenarios. So that's the one I quickly adopted and have worked with ever since. And a life extension of that, as relationships go through the natural progression, is cohabitation, is that we live together in the same home. Now, it's non-functional for us all to have the same bedroom. Mm-hmm. And there's other reasons I'm against that. But they have their own rooms, they have their own space. And that makes for a much more peaceful home as well, if everyone has their own space. And
what do they call a seven-person relationship?
There's not a solid definition for that one, but it would probably
be Casey Jones.
Well, the most common word used would be polycule.
Polycule.
Yeah.
Okay. We got to call it.
I don't really care about the definitions too much.
We got to call it a Casey Jones. You got to coin it for you.
Well, I don't know of many others, but and the other big important thing as well, I think it's really important for the man to have his own space. This is really important. I think this is another thing that's missing in even monogamous marriages, is that the man has his own space. And I don't like the idea of a man having just the den. I think that's a cop out. But I do have my den, so to speak, in that I have a floor of the house, which is mine. And it's very large, it's very den-like, but it's my rooms in there. I've got a king-size bed, I've got this, I've got my library, I've got my music room, I've got a bar, I've got everything. I've got my lounge area, I've got a little dining area, I've got the whole thing. And it's all like a gentleman's, it's all decked out like a gentleman's club. And that's my masculine space. And they come into my space.
Got it. Let me ask you this. I had heard from someone that said the best way to bring peace in your house, and this is coming from somebody I think that had two wives, is basically take your wives to bed together at the same time. Like if there's like some kind of disagreement or argument going on, just sleep with them both at the same time, and that'll bring peace and harmony. I don't know if that was a wives' tale or a rumor.
No, it's definitely true. It is definitely okay. True. There's a lot of important things that I have implemented and have consistently worked to creating a peaceful home. And some of them are just complete non-starters. If you're talking to a religious person with certain convictions that just believe certain things are just terrible and should never be done. If you believe that threesomes are terrible and should never be done, there's some kind of evil thing, and also have you cast in the lake of fire. And even though you can't exactly point to the scripture that would claim that, but they must be bad because my pastor said they were bad.
Too much fun. It's got to be bad.
Yeah, it's got to be. Isn't that much fun? It's got to be bad. But no, I will, and this will piss off your audience, I'm sure. Threesomes are a must, are an absolute must for bonding. It's got to be. Otherwise, threesomes diffuse sexual jealousy. There are certain things that are, there are certain hurdles and things you're going to have to overcome in this situation. One of them is emotional jealousy, and another is sexual jealousy, and a feeling of sexual competition with this other woman. Mm-hmm. And as number one often said, that the unknown makes everything more scary, and the easiest way to stop feeling jealous or insecure about another girl is to get to know her. Mm-hmm. And as you get to know her, she stops becoming an idea and becomes a person. Mm-hmm. And you become friends with that person. You realize you have a lot in common with this person. You'd actually really get along with this person. And you become friends with this person. And now it's not a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. And likewise, there's a feeling of, there's women, I say even more so than men, are prone to sexual jealousy, in that women place so much of their own perceived value in sex. Mm-hmm. And that this other woman might be having crazier, more wild sex with you than she does, and doing things that you don't do, and pleasing you in ways that she doesn't, can create a sense of sexual jealousy. And the easiest way to demystify that is just to have threesomes together, and to all three of you enjoy each other together and enjoy sex together, and go, this isn't some scary person. This is just another person having sex, and it's not that scary at all. And this is really fun. And you lay there afterwards in your endorphin-soaked bliss, and you cuddle and you bond. Mm-hmm. You fall asleep and you wake up as a much tighter unit than you were before.
I love that. I love that you see the person. You see him as a person. I mean, like, I could imagine you start caring for that person, and you're like, you want them to experience joy and happiness. And that's really what monogamy does. It creates a very much a win-lose situation, because you got women that are out there. It's like gaming musical chairs, where there's only so many good men out there, good men, marriageable, and the women are, you know, they'll be the side chick, hoping that they'll leave the wife for you and break up a family. Versus, you know, this creates so much more of a win-win.
Just bring him in. It's there's a lot of anxiety for women in monogamy. First of all, so many women get really, really, really angry about any promotion of polygyny, because it threatens gynocentric power.
Sure.
Monogamy hands women a monopoly over the men in society's access to sex, which they can turn that town on and off, and give them little good boy sex tickets if they're obedient, and turn it off if they're disobedient. And it shifts all the power in society in one direction. And polygyny undermines that power structure. So there's a lot of women out there who get very, very, very angry about the idea of polygyny, because it threatens them. But there's a lot of women who might have enough wherewithal to realize that it actually can help them a lot, insofar that in polygyny, women don't get discarded because the husband felt an attraction to a young, pretty thing. I describe monogamy as a two-seater coupe, and the man's driving, the woman's in the passenger seat, and there's only two seats in the car, and there's a pretty young hitchhiker up the road in a pair of Daisy Dukes with a thumb out, and she sees him flick on his indicator to pull over. And she immediately has this state of anxiety. what the heck are you doing, mate? Where's she going to sit? There's only two seats here. For her to come in, I have to be ejected. And that's monogamy. And monogamy is that monogamy is there's only two seats in the relationship. And for the man to bring in someone else means ejecting the wife.
Right.
And that's a lot of anxiety. And it's an terribly, terribly unfair dichotomy. Especially when you're considering someone, a wife who is a wonderful, loving, committed, incredible woman and should not have to fear and live in a state of anxiety of being replaced or rejected or ending up single in middle age or late middle age because she's not as young and pretty as she might have once been after giving three children.
Right.
Just because her husband has an infatuation with some pretty young thing. That shouldn't be a fear that she ever has to have. And it's not a fear that exists in polygyny. Now, polygyny isn't that two-seater coupe. Polygyny is a eight-seater minivan. You know, like I can flick the indicator on and there's about four spare seats in the back. Pull over, hop in love, where you're going. You can take a seat. And her seat is secure. Her seat's not going anywhere. She's not getting ejected from it. If this person becomes a permanent fixture, so be it. If this person was something we're just looking at and exploring and maybe just checking out to see if they fit and then turned out they didn't, then we can drop them off at the nearest town and no harm, no foul. We haven't lost any. And I certainly haven't jeopardized a long, ongoing, committed, loving relationship with a wife and broken up a family over just exploring the possibility of this other person.
See, it's exactly what God said, right? God says, Exodus 21:10, if a man takes a second wife, he can't deny the first food, clothing, and sexual rights. He has to continue to treat the first wife the same as he treated her before. He can't, you know, start giving all this attention to the younger one. But what Paul preached against in the New Testament was serial monogamy. Exactly what you said with that two-seater, hopping from one monogamous relationship to the other. We're not supposed to get divorced. You marry her, and look, you can take a second one if you like, but you stay with the first one. And think how clean everything is because you're right. How often does a man fall in love with some pretty young thing and leave his first wife and his kids? Now the woman's 50 years old. She's had three kids. She doesn't look the same. Her chance of finding another man to take care of her in her old age is very slim. And
thanks for joining my Facebook group. Now, if you want the best piece of advice I've ever been given on having success with the opposite sex for free, go to my website, robbkowalski.com, and join my email list. I'll send you valuable content and just keep you up to date on everything that's happening in my life. Thanks.
It's great and how often does 6 months down the line, after that man just torpedoed his own family, realize that this pretty young secretary is a complete idiot, that he actually has nothing in common with her, that she's right. Completely unsuitable for a long-term relationship, that she didn't really see him as a long-term viable scenario. She was just taking advantage of him for his wealth, his status, his connections, whatever it might be. And he ends up alone also.
Right.
And this marriage, this family was just torn apart because this dude had an infatuation with his secretary who was flirting with him. And yeah, maybe things weren't as great at home. Maybe the sex life had dropped off a bit. Maybe the wife had felt a bit too comfortable. There was no dread game. There was no competition anxiety. So maybe she had dropped off things a bit, suddenly the guy was feeling unsatisfied, unappreciated, unattractive, and this pretty young girl flirts with him, and next thing you know, an entire family is torpedoed.
Yeah,
and that's not a situation that need exist. It's certainly not a situation that need exist in polygyny.
Let me ask you a question. Do you, because I imagine you're pretty busy with all these wives physically.
do you want to have sex every night? Because, I mean, I imagine, because if a girl gets you one night a week, that's why I think Rich told me, you know, you have a spend one night with each of the wives and maybe your seventh night is with, you know, just hanging out with the boys or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's accurate, but if that is accurate, I'd imagine that those wives like that meal. They make their one meal. They want that. They want to get screwed on their one night.
This is why I recommend that men don't overextend themselves. This is why I said earlier, men do not take up six wives. This is foolish. Do not do it. Do not do what I did. Do not follow my example there. I would say, like all things, your reference to Exodus, you should not take on more than you can service. I, fortunately, am a man with a very, very, very high libido and a high capacity for sex. And this is something that is proven, at least through my years of as a male escort and in adult film. And being a general man whore, I'm someone who has an exceedingly high libido to the point where monogamy was sexually unfair and arduous to one woman. Polygyny became somewhat of a reprieve for one woman. I wouldn't recommend six, but there are other mechanisms that have alleviated even that for someone like myself. The first of all is that I'm not required, because I'm not Muslim or Islamic, there's no prohibition against me having sex with more than one person, you know, at that time. If I'm having sex and I have all that sexual energy, I can share it with more than one person at a time. So although there is, you know, the alone night schedule, that isn't, sex isn't restricted to that, and that doesn't preclude the bringing in of other people. Also, as I mentioned or alluded to earlier, the wives' meeting, another thing I stole from Big Love and implemented, was when they organised that schedule. They organised that schedule themselves. They scheduled all the alone nights based upon their needs, their schedule, their menstrual cycle, when they may be ovulating, what other stresses and responsibilities and obligations they might have. They'll horse trade amongst themselves, you know, this night for that night. I'm going away next week. Can I have two nights this week? And you can have my extra night next week, et cetera, et cetera. But the other thing that often will happen is two partners may decide that they want more time rather than less alone time. So they might decide to double up and we do triad nights. So,
now do you have like veto? Do you have veto power? Do you have to approve this and be like,
I mean, or is it pretty much the end, like available? I mean, in the most explicit way, as the husband and father of the home, the leader of the home, I have veto power of everything. But it would be foolish of me to hand someone the responsibility to complete a task and give them my trust to complete that task and then undermine it by coming in and fucking around with it. I gave them that task. I intentionally, when I created Alone Night, wives' meetings many, many years ago, I laid out the rules for wives' meetings would do, what they would be, what their mandate was, and that I was not to be part of it. I self-ejected from the environment, lest my presence cause an influencing factor. So then they have to work together. They have to work through issues and figure things out. And so I wouldn't undermine that, and just roll with the decisions as they're made. So no, but as I said, often what will happen is, let's say, you know, number two and number five will decide to that they would like to have two triad knights instead of one alone knight. So basically, that means that number five will be invited along for the ride on number one's knight. Number one reciprocally gets invited along for the ride on number five's knight, and then we have two knights together. And obviously, that's inferring that any sex that night will be inclusive of both of them.
Sure. Someone asked a question, one of the guys in the coaching program, and I've actually wondered the same thing. He said they have a wives meeting, which sounds great. Do you also have a family meeting with all the women plus the children, or marriage meetings with each one? Do you have individual meetings with each one, or do you have like a family meeting?
Great question. The answer is yes to both. Family meeting is called dinner. And it happens every night. Mm-hmm. It happens every night. People can talk about the day. People can bring things up. It's an open forum, and it gives me an opportunity while everyone's sitting around to address anything that might have come up that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, obviously, I will often call a family meeting should there be a need. If things are more difficult to coordinate, I'll send out a message in the group chat. We're having a family meeting this afternoon, this time. Make sure you're there for it. If you're planning to head to the gym, you're not anymore. This is important. We all need to sit down and address something. And likewise, if I need to discuss things one-on-one with a partner, then I'll grab her, we'll pull her aside and say, hey, we need to discuss something. And vice versa, if there's an issue that they need raised with me, they can raise that with me. If all things allowing, I'll pause, I'll take time, I'll step aside, I'll sit down and go, what's going on? They can bring up the issue or grievance, or she said this and they did that and I'm upset. And I'll be the arbiter of that situation for her. So both occur.
Gotcha. One of the questions I had, I did see on your Twitter or your X account that you had some legal issues, some problems with the Australian government possibly. And then I think Rich had said something like you really kind of figured a way to set this up in a way that keeps the law off your back and kind of protects you from, because obviously bigamy is illegal there as it is here.
Yes, it is.
So how do you avoid legal problems? Because what I had thought was, I'm not going to get married if I do this, which I presume I will. I'm not going to do it on a government sanctioned wedding, but they can still get you just from like living with women, right? Because it's a common law marriage.
Well, it depends on your jurisdiction. In Australia, bigamy is a crime, but in our, dare I say, degenerate society, affairs aren't having crimes, aren't crimes. Infidelity isn't a crime. Polyamory isn't a crime. So all of these things have been decriminalized many, many years ago, essentially opening the door for polygamy as long as you don't invite the government into the marriages. So all my marriages were sealed with very wonderful, lovely weddings. We just didn't register those weddings with the Australian Department of Births, Deaths and Marriages. We didn't invite the government into those marriages, which makes things infinitely easier and more simple. And quite frankly, I don't think marriage should be the purview of government anyway.
I agree. How do you provide protection to the women? Because do they have any concerns of like, you know, they spend their youth with you and contribute financially to the household, and then what prevents them from just being booted?
What prevents them from being booted? Nothing ever prevents anyone in any relationship from being booted. I mean, that's the thing about relationships. They're a mutually consensual arrangement that kind of you want to be desired by both people. And if, quite frankly, if someone doesn't desire it, I wouldn't want them to be there.
Well, financially is what I meant. And this is where I go with this, because this is the one of the pushbacks that people give. They're like, well, you know, they want a government sanctioned wedding because the government's going to fight for them. And then there's going to be alimony and all the other things. And I'm like, well, first off, as a believer, you're not even supposed to take other Christians to court. That's very clear in the Bible. The Bible says, Paul says, it's better to get taken advantage of than go before a judge as two believers. But people like to forget that. Now, but I do understand their question. So I had thought
there was some kind of contract. Let me make this very clear to you. I have specifically structured my life to be unrewarding as humanly possible for any woman who decides to walk out on me. She has the right to do that. Mm. Go for it. Your life is yours to live. We do not share finances. Our finances in our marriage are not in union. I have my own finances. She has her own finances. She has her own bank account. She has her own employment. She has her own credit cards. She has her own superannuation, or what you guys would call 401k. All those things are her own. She has her own vehicle and her name. She is her own person. If she is living her life as she wishes to live it, and if she wishes to live her life somewhere else, she can go do that. But I am fundamentally against the idea that a woman should benefit from being with a man as essentially part of being with that man, and then leave that man but still demand those benefits. You quit the job. They don't still have to keep paying you if you quit the job. You're allowed to quit any job at any time, but your employer shouldn't have to keep paying you for the next 20 years, even though you quit your job.
Well, I love that. I don't think you should incentivize women to leave, because that's exactly what the family courts do. Is they you know, it becomes financially beneficial for them to walk out and creates more broken homes. So I like that. But I guess where I'm going with that is, let's say if the woman didn't work, if she was a homemaker, making it easy for the man to go to, you know, take care of the kids and take care of the house, and the man was out pursuing a career and building wealth, and then, you know, he kicks her to the curb and is, you know, when she's older, then she's not protected. So what you're saying is the woman contributes to the, she's going out working, she's making her own money. Somebody had posted
there are no free rides in life. This is reality of life. There are no free rides. Everyone contributes. If someone wants to reduce their work hours down to a bare minimum for a couple of years, or even take a year off, that is completely understandable. It's their right to do so. But if they want to kick back for 20 years and not participate in the free market or taking care of themselves, then I don't really see them having much of a leg to stand on at the end of it. I mean, they just had a free ride for 20 years. And they want to complain that they were taken advantage of. Oh, I don't really quite buy it. That sounds like a good deal to me.
No, I think it's good. You don't realize how much how Christ-like or Christian your views are, because somebody had posted earlier and said, why doesn't he work and take care of all six wives, be a leader? I'm like, first off, if you read Proverbs 31, lady, that woman worked. She was a hustler. That, she made money. She
that,
bought
that, fields. That is just pure gynocentric. Place women on some altar above men so we can worship them and we can slave away and toil in the fields and just bestow all our wealth upon them. No, that's not how it works. And you know, provision isn't the sole man the sole responsibility of the man, and child rearing isn't the sole responsibility of the women. These are two things that are shared. Just as child rearing should be shared amongst, you know, father and mother, so is provisioning. This whole thing that these tradcons have dreamed up, that they should just sit around in flower dresses making sourdough while their husband has to go out there and work a 100-hour week to provide for their fantasy Instagram lifestyle, is absolute crap. It's not based in reality. And this is another part of wives' meeting is they handle the finances of the home. That's part of the responsibility that was handed to them. So they got to look at all the bills that have to be paid. All this has to be paid, the shopping expenses, this expenses, those expenses. That will, what the mortgage payment might be that month. And that will give them a number, which is what everyone, all seven people, must contribute that fortnight into, or that week, into the family business account from which everything is paid. Everyone contributes equally. If someone wants to work extremely reduced hours, they can, because that number, by the way, is a very small number divided amongst, is a very small number. A person could work one day a week and right, still meet that quota with right, with plenty left over.
So they're contributing to the income on an equal share, and then they're, if they make more than that, they're able to have their own savings. And
so, for example, number two is a little workaholic. She's always got about 10 things on the burner at any given time, and as a result, she has a significantly healthy bank account, and she has toys, and she has motorbikes, and she has four-wheel drives, and all sorts of her different things that she's into and pursuits that she does. And that's because she works, and she works hard, and she studied hard, and she applies herself, and she's got all that energy, and that's what she wants to do. Now, if someone else wants to sit around and read books, lounging under a tree by the pond, that's their right to do that also. But they don't get to complain because they don't have motorbikes, that I should go and then purchase their motorbikes because they didn't go do it themselves. That's theirs to deal with. They're grown-ups. I'm not a fan of this infantilization of women. They're grown-ups. They're right, adults. Treat them as such.
Good stuff, Casey. So you had mentioned you get a lot of backlash from people, and I definitely have gotten my fair share of backlash, especially from women. I find it surprising when men give backlash. But a friend of mine said to the other day, he said, you got to realize that when you hit men with this reality, you're forcing them to face themselves, that either they can't do it or how much their women got them by the balls. And they're just like basically turned over, turned over their nuts to their wife. And when they see a guy that's saying, no, look, this is your right, you can do this, they don't want to face the fact that they're too afraid to even try.
I think there's two factors to it. I think you hit two factors pretty much bang on the head with some slight adjustment. One is, yes, there are those who are completely and utterly captured by the gynocentric world order of worshipping women as their deities. I'd say the Western world, and I'd say the Western church doesn't worship God, it worships women. And I'd say the second factor is, once again, their own insecurities, that one, they realize that they could never do this themselves, but I'll go one step further. They have a fear that not only could they not do this themselves, but if this was to become common practice, not only would they not get two women, they wouldn't get one. That the only reason they have any woman in their life is because societally enforced monogamy has forced women into accepting life with unfulfilling, unsatisfying, substandard, lazy, absolute crap men, because they're not allowed to share the good ones. And enforced monogamy has allowed men to become far lazier than they should otherwise be, because they know that it's the gender breakup of society is essentially 50-50, and that if women want a man, they just have to, and want a marriage, they just have to accept what's left over on the table.
Wow, I hadn't considered that. And that's even a term. I think it was Jesus where he talked about the person that has will be given more, but he who does not, even what he has will be taken from him. So this is a principle. It's not a principle of like everybody gets something. No, look, the person that does more gets more.
the person that doesn't do shit, even what you have is going to be taken from you. You get nothing. So, like, I think that to me, it seems very, very much a Christian principle, what you just said. And women are already doing this, because when you look at the fact that 80% of the women are sleeping with the top 20% of the men, they're already polygamous. Yes.
We already live in a polygynous society. We just refuse to admit it.
Yeah.
Polygyny has never gone away. It has always existed. It will always exist. It is not societally acceptable. We have societally enforced monogamy, which just creates serial monogamy. It creates huge amounts of divorce. It creates marital dissatisfaction. It creates lazy men. It creates lazy women. Women in marriage are alleviated from competition and anxiety. They become lazy. They become fat. They stop trying to please their husband. They stop doing the freaky sex things that they used to do for their husband when they were dating or when they first got married, because now they got him in lockdown and they know that this is all that this is all he's got and all he's going to get. And if he looks anywhere else, he's going to lose the house and he's going to lose the kids and he's going to lose everything else. So he better just sit there and shut the fuck up and take it.
That's so good. That's true. What would you give just like best tips to give some guys out there that may be thinking about doing this? Is there certain books they should start off by reading, or what do you tell people?
There is a long, long list of required reading. I think the first thing is to understand human sexuality. And I think the two first books I recommend to people to break their societally enforced narrative on human sexuality is Sperm Wars by Dr. Robin Baker and Sex at Dawn by Dr. Christopher Ryan. There's a phenomenal book called polygamy and then dot dot polyandry, polygyny and polyamory. That's a really good one. There is some great resources out there, but they are few and far between. I'd say the first step is to understand evolutionary psychology as it pertains to human mate selection theory, to actually understand how we're built and how we are evolved to function and why we alternate as societies between enforced monogamy and polygyny, while we go from pair bonding to tournament-based mating systems, the stresses and the factors that influence those things, why our society is now entering a phase which the stresses are going to push further towards polygyny. Why that's already happened. It's been happening for probably 60 years now. And look, humans are an incredibly adaptable species. Monogamy is a very functional and successful relationship dynamic for certain people under certain environmental factors. For other people, it is a terribly non-functional and unhealthy dynamic that creates, as I said, lazy men, lazy women, and a lot of discontent and dysfunction.
I think there's a verse in Isaiah that talks about before Jesus comes back, before he reigns, it says, in that day, seven women will take hold of one man and say, please yes. take away our reproach. We'll provide our own food. And I think we're yes. headed for that. I think it's, you know, as the world continues to deteriorate. Yeah, we're there, right?
We're there. We just haven't realized it yet. It's too late. It doesn't matter how hard you turn now, we're still going to hit that iceberg. The ship has already sunk. We just don't realize it yet. It's just a matter of time. I think we're there, and it's either adapt or die. And I think this is one of the adaptations that we're going to see becoming more and more prominent over the next decade or so. It's increasing in the zeitgeist across multiple religious fronts and cultural fronts. There are a number of countries around the world discussing implementing legislation to legalize polygamy, That's because there is an undercurrent of this, of people yearning for this, people seeking it out. I think we're going to see as masculinity is crumbling across the West, we're going to see the smaller percentage of hyper-masculine men essentially create harems. And women are desperate to join these harems already. Yeah. Women, I think, thrive in harems. There is competition anxiety. There is companionship. There is camaraderie. There is shared responsibility. There is the sharing of tasks and labor. And there is no shortage of women who want it. There's none. I remember a number of years ago when I was in the early stages of my most current relationship and I had three wives and I posted, actually someone else posted about our family on a Facebook group in Australia called Bad Girls Advice. It has, you know, 500,000 female members. And I was given access so I could actually like read. I couldn't comment, but I could see the post. And in 24 hours, it had garnered somewhere in the vicinity of 20,000 comments. And the vast majority of the comments were women saying, "Oh my God, I want this. I wish my husband would get another wife or girlfriend. I wish my boyfriend would get another wife or girlfriend. I wish I had someone to go shopping with. I wish I had someone to go do this with, someone to do that with." And there is a factor of that. It just alleviates so much in relationships to have another person there. It's way better for men, and it's better for women. It's women are constantly in monogamous relationships, they have such a yearning for another female presence in the home. They try and make their husband, their boyfriend, that proxy female presence. They try and feminize him. They try and drag him along on all these feminized things. Oh, let's go shopping. Let's do this. I want to try on all 20 pairs of shoes and dresses. No guy wants to do that. No, there's not a guy on the planet that wants to do that. That's why they have those courtesy seats in malls with all us unhappy husbands sitting on them. But suddenly, when there's a second wife in the home, a second partner in the home, girlfriend, they're happy. They're running off. They're doing these things together. They're watching stupid girly movies and drinking wine. While I can just hang out. I can go to the pub and get some peace and quiet with my mates. And they're happy. I'm happy. They're going and doing all these things together. They're no longer trying to force me into that box. They're more free to be who they are. I'm more free to be who I am. I'm more free to embrace and expand my own masculine interests and pursuits, and then more free to pursue their feminine interests and pursuits. Let's say the only problem with two wives is that suddenly you are having to divide your time between two, and by doing so, you're always excluding one. You have the backseat dilemma. For example, someone's always banished to the back seat, feeling like a kid in the back, and that always causes some degree of discontent. To go out on a date night with one, you're always leaving one alone, and your phone's always buzzing in your pocket when they're messaging you, even though they promise not to. There's, you know, to spend alone time with one means to leave the other alone. This causes a bit more discontent and jealousy, slight undercurrent of hostility can manifest in the home with two wives. Uh-huh. However, once you get to three, your home hits equilibrium. What happens when you get to three is that suddenly there's no backseat dilemma because there's two in the back together and they're just chit-chatting away, having a great time. Suddenly now when you go out for a date night with one of your partners, girlfriends, wives, the other two are at home together watching stupid, you know, HBO movies about, you know, big city lawyer girl moves to the country, falls in love with cowboy, and they're drinking wine, having a great time. And you come home from your date night with wife number two, and number one and three on the couch laughing their asses off, cackling, and they're bonding and having a great time. Now, when you go out to a cafe, there's two seats on either side of the table. There's not one isolated person. If you're going to ride, there's no isolated people. Once you delve into polygamy and you bring in an extra wife, you start realizing how much infrastructure in society is created around two people. And that always is isolating for one. So once you get to three, you now have two pairs and everything hits equilibrium. Your home becomes infinitely more peaceful. The rates of any disagreements or silly little fights or cattiness just goes out the window and it becomes a very peaceful existence. Three is the perfect number.
Well, I think I need four because if I have a threesome, I don't want the good one to be left alone.
That's why you have foursomes. Foursomes are great fun.
I just said that to piss everybody off.
Foursomes are a wonderful bonding experience.
Okay.
I thoroughly recommend sevensomes.
I don't think anybody feels sorry for you. Next time we see Casey, he's going to be the skeleton laying there, sucked dry.
Make sure you take your zinc and magnesium every day. You're going to need it. You got to hit the gym. You got to keep your cardio up. Unfortunately, I know everyone hates cardio, but you need it, especially into your 40s.
Well, I tell you what, this was a great, fascinating conversation, man. I really enjoyed it, and I'm definitely want to stay connected to you because I'm sure there's a lot more questions that I could ask you as I, possibly pursue this. But everybody, follow.
I love this topic. So thank you so much for giving me a chance to talk about it.
Now you post some really entertaining stuff too. So check them out on Twitter, guys. Casey Jones 26.
I don't even know my handle. I just let it self generate. Because I never expected to gain any following on this account. Okay, it's Casey Jones 26383. 26383.
If you would, guys, follow him. Drop your biggest takeaway in the comments. If you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. Feel free to share this, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Casey.
Take care.